The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome into the ESPN FC studios. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Always good to be with you, but especially good to be with you on the eve of another Premier League season. That's right. It's as if the football never left. And to help us with our continued look forward, we welcome in Stuart Robson, Frank LeBeuf, and Don Hutchison. Gentlemen, I think our producer wanted to take the day off today because I woke up to an email asking you three for what your biggest questions were coming into the season. Robbo, I'll start with you. You asked if Manchester City will be better defensively. I should point out they only allowed 35 goals last year. That's less than a goal a game. Is it realistic to expect them to be much better than that?
Yeah, because they lost too many games, and they lost games because they didn't defend well enough. When Man City defend well high up the field, they don't have the problems defensively. But last season, they were too easy to play around when they were trying to press the ball. The midfield, I didn't think, was quite energetic enough. And they need Fernandinho playing as the holding midfield player. Rodri, I don't think, is good enough or athletic enough to cover the ground across the midfield. And they need to work harder at the defensive shape. And that's why I think they've bought Nathan Ake. Whether he's going to be good enough, whether he's going to play in a two or a three, we're not quite sure. But they need to be better defensively come the start of the season if they are going to challenge Liverpool for the title.
Frank, City have been linked to Koulibaly, but Robbo just mentioned there, the only signing they've made, at least defensively, Nathan Ake, is that going to be enough?
I don't think so. I mean, I know Ake played for Chelsea, played sometimes for Chelsea, then have been on loan twice, and now I'm very surprised that he signed for, I think it was £41 million transfer. He's a good player, played for the national team. I saw him playing last week on the left-back position, but I don't think he's the type of player that Guardiola wants, especially as a centre-half. He wants people stronger, he wants people more technical. And, I'm surprised that he signed him, maybe because he couldn't sign anybody else. I want to wish him the best, but I think Ake doesn't fit the way Guardiola sees the football.
Don, how important is this Koulibaly pursuit for Manchester City? Can they win the title if they don't get him?
I don't think they can, Seb. I think they have to sign Koulibaly. I think Nathan Ake is a good signing because he can play in a number of positions. He can play in a two. He can play a left back. He can play left of a three. So he fills a few positions, Nathan Ake. He's a very solid signing, a very good player, but doesn't convince me that City can go to a title without someone like Koulibaly, a real leader, to play alongside Laporte and to convince, I think, everyone. And also, I think, to convince the players that Man City you're playing against. When you're playing up against defenders like Otamendi and John Stones, you half think you've got a chance you can get at them. I think if Laporte and Koulibaly were a pair, I think that would be one of the best in the Premier League. And that then would convince me City have got a chance of getting their title back.
I just want to say something. Ake is a lefty. Laporte is a lefty. We are looking for in Manchester City. He's looking for a right player, a righty player, alongside Laporte. So, therefore, Ake and Laporte cannot play together. That's as simple as that.
Robbo, just real quick, Pep Guardiola is still the Manchester City manager. Steve Nicol on this show all the time talks about he doesn't work on defense on the training ground. How confident are you that Guardiola can turn this around from a defensive standpoint?
Well, he does work at the defence, but he doesn't. It's not the actual back four he works on or the back three. He works on the front players pressing the ball, the midfield players pressing the ball. And he thinks if they do that right, the back four can be good players. They can come out with the ball, they can read situations, and it's easy for them. But at times last season, they got played around, and then the back four or back three have to work, and he has to work on that. If the press gets played around, they've got to do more defensive work.
All right, let's move on to Liverpool. Don, you asked if Liverpool would strengthen their starting 11 for the first time in two seasons. That leads me to ask you the question. They won the league by 18 points last year. Why do they need to strengthen that starting 11? And if you're saying they do, where?
Well, me and Robbo were both at the Community Shield when Liverpool played Arsenal, and Arsenal just completely sat off Liverpool and allowed them to have loads of possession, and Gomez kept hold of the ball and Van Dijk kept hold of the ball. They played balls into midfield. The midfield for Liverpool on that day just passed it sideways. There was no real penetration. And I think a lot of teams are obviously going to respect Liverpool being, you know, the title holders and the champions, and they're going to sit off Liverpool next season. So what you need, in my opinion, is someone like Thiago, who's got a range of pass. You know, he is a player that I've not seen for a long time play the game the way central midfield players, where his range of passing excellent. He can ping it 50 yards right side, he can ping it 60 yards left. He fires balls into number 10s and into number 9s. He's aggressive with his passing. He's very confident on the ball, very rarely gives it away. So I just think, apart from Naby Keita, I think what Liverpool have are excellent midfield players who press, you know, solely to win the ball back and give it to the front three. Naby Keita changed the game in the Community Shield when he came on because of his running from midfield and his directness. I think they just need that something different, that little technician in Thiago. If they get the Thiago signing, it would then convince me they can retain their title. If they don't, I still think Guardiola does, and he probably signs Koulibaly, and then that leapfrogs them to maybe just being favourites.
Robbo, you agree with Don in terms of where Liverpool need the upgrades?
Yes, Thiago would be an excellent passer of the ball. They need more creativity. There's another way to break defensive down when you've just got passes in the team. That's to have someone that can run with the ball, go past people with the ball. And they've got someone there, but they don't really use him to do that. That's Oxlade-Chamberlain. When he was at Arsenal and when he's played for Liverpool on certain occasions, running at defenders, going past them, and that changes the whole defensive structure of the opposition. So they need somebody to open up defences, whether it be a passer like Thiago or to play Oxlade-Chamberlain in that sort of right-sided midfield position where he can go past people to open up defences.
Manchester City, actually, Frank, is a pretty serious favourite when we look at the Premier League odds. I guess that's people assuming that Liverpool are going to have a hangover. Is that a fair assumption, or are we being too harsh when we look ahead to the coming season?
Well, nobody knows what's going to happen, but it's true that I have question marks about the fact that Liverpool can be, you know, blasé in a way that because some players, you know, have been established for like 2 years. They just were born in the world of football, like Alexander Arnold, Robertson, Van Dijk, and some other. Even Mane, Salah, and Firmino, who have absolutely fantastic player, will have to confirm again that they are top-notch players, because they, it's what we want to see. And because there isn't any new players coming around to, in fact, see what's going to happen in the term of competition between the players, we don't know how will be the situation, the way they want to, the players want to behave facing the new season. So I'm afraid, and I hope Jurgen Klopp will prove me the opposite, that that some players will never be as much as competitive that they've been the last two seasons, and they will need sometimes some needles, you know, to make sure they wake up and they go back to the fight like they all used to do.
Hey, Don, we don't know how long this will last, but for at least a while, Liverpool will be playing without a full stadium. I've heard some people suggest that that'll hurt them more than other teams. You buying that?
Slightly, Seb. I think that's a good point. I think when you simplify the game and you look at the best footballing team in the Premier League without any fans inside the stadium, I think that's Man City. I think Guardiola's team play the way they play with loads of rhythm. They know each other inside out. The way they operate during a game, they're easy on the eye. They keep possession. I think with Liverpool, I think they need the emotion of the fans. I do think whenever I've been at Anfield and when I've commentated on games, you know, in the first half, if they've been behind or drawn or even leading by the odd goal, whenever they kick towards the top end and they use their fans, I'd back them to beat anyone. And we've seen that in domestic football and we've seen that in European football. So I buy the argument, certainly.
All right, let's move to Chelsea. Frank, you've asked, will Frank Lampard confirm what we feel about him? I guess I have to ask you, what do you feel about Frank Lampard after the first season in charge?
Well, he showed us that he had some ideas about the way he wanted to play, that he wasn't scared of launching new players and new young players to the big fight. Now saying that, we all know that he had no pressure last season, no recruitment whatsoever for Chelsea, no pressure because no demands of results from the board. But this season, with the money that they spent, with all the what the people want, the fans want from Chelsea, we won't to see something more. We want to see Chelsea maybe fighting with Manchester City and Liverpool, even if we know that's going to be difficult. But we expect more from Lampard, more decisions, because they will have more competition between the players. And of course, we don't want to see like 30 points behind, even if they finish third, being 30 points behind Liverpool or Manchester City.
I'd ask Don, but we know what he'll say about his good friend. So, Rabo, I'll ask you, is the jury still out on Frank Lampard? If so, why? And what does he have to do to end that?
I'm not sure the jury's out on him at the moment. He's going to have to show what he's made of in terms of he's bought a lot of new players. He's got to set them into a system. He's got to make sure the game plans are right. He's got to get the best out of the players he's brought in. He's going to have to leave a lot of players out. How can he keep those happy and bring them in at the right time? How does he still bring the youngsters on, which he said he wanted to do last season with all these new players coming? I think he'll do a good job. I think Chelsea are a good side. They've bought some good players. I think the one problem is how he's going to use Timo Werner. Is he just going to be somebody to run in behind? Is he going to play him from the left-hand side, making those little diagonal runs? That would be his biggest problem. And also sorting out defence. But I think he's proved he's a good enough coach. He's got a good sidekick with him in Jody Morris. I think he'll show he's a good manager this season.
Don, all these new pieces, that's really going to be the test for your good friend, isn't it?
It is. I think the hard part, which is going to be brand new to Frank, Seb, is, you know, the world-class players that he's brought in. If he plays Timo Werner as a number nine, that obviously upsets Tammy Abraham. It upsets Olivier Giroud, so he's got to keep them happy. If he plays Timo Werner off the left-hand side, he's got to, you know, maybe keep Christian Pulisic or Hakim Ziyech happy as well. If he goes into midfield, now, where's Kai Havertz going to play? He's going to be playing a little bit deeper, I would imagine. So where does that leave someone like Mason Mount? So listen, these are the problems that you've got to solve. And it's a lot of problems that Frank has to solve, because when you talk about Chelsea, and Frank knows, you know, it's no good be talking about Chelsea saying they should be happy for top four and top three. Chelsea are a club that should be trying to win the title and go deep into the Champions League. So that's why Frank's been brought in. He's used the Eden Hazard money extremely well. You know, he's lost Eden Hazard for, you know, in and around £150 million. And he's went out and bought some real eye-catching players. And I think when you watch Chelsea play next season, it's going to be very interesting. But they're going to be a super side to watch.
Rob, our next question comes from you. Has to do with Manchester United. Has Ole Gunnar Solskjaer got the ability to change things in-game? I don't hear you convinced about United's manager.
That's why I asked the question, because I've seen a lot of games that Manchester United have played and they've gone out with a game plan and the opposition have stopped them playing that way. Whether it be they try to play out from the back, the opposition said, no, we're not going to let you do that. And they carried on trying to do it. And he didn't seem to be able to change things in the game. We saw that in the semi-final against Chelsea in the FA Cup. We saw it in the Europa League. There was times when they couldn't get the balls into the front players, but they carried on trying to do it rather than switching the play quickly, playing out from the back when it wasn't on to play out from the back. That is the sign of a really top-class manager. When Mourinho first came to Chelsea, he had that ability. Although he had a structured game plan, when things weren't going right, he quickly changed it and went somewhere else. Solskjaer hasn't proved that yet. And if he wants to win the title, be up near the top, he has to be a better tactician once the game starts.
Frank, I wonder, do you share any of the same doubts as Rob about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for him. It's going to be a real challenge, and he will have to prove that he's as powerful that we hope he is. He will have to sort out the problem with Pogba. I think it's Stuart who said that last time. If Fernandes plays with Matic and Van de Beek, where's going to be Pogba? On the bench? Good luck, Mr. Solskjaer. What's going to happen of the Rashford and Martial mood? If Sancho signs, what are you going to do with Greenwood? It's always the same thing. I mean, Don talked about Frank Lampard, you know, having some trouble with the bench and some players if they don't play. It's going to be the same thing for Solskjaer, and how he's going to sort out the problem. And the main problem is going to be Paul Pogba, for sure. Because where, again, it's going to be the position of Paul Pogba. And we know it's been a problem like a year ago, and the problem will come back.
Don, is that the biggest problem for United in your mind? Where to put Paul Pogba?
Not necessarily. I could quite easily see a midfield of Pogba, Bruno Fernandes and Van der Beek as the sort of number 10, because that's where he likes to play. He likes to run forward. He's got fantastic energy. I think the problem for Ole is, which is, you know, inevitable for where he is at in his managerial stage with the players that he's got, is you could pick a Man United 11, you could pick their strongest 11, but then when you need to change your game or change tactics, apart from maybe Dan James, the bench is not that strong. So even though Juan Mata's been a very, very good player, an exceptional player, that out of form Jesse Lingard, these are not going to be guys that you can bring off the bench. You're going to change your game. So Jadon Sancho, all of a sudden, if he comes in, then he pushes Mason Greenwood, and Rashford gets pushed a little bit more. Martial gets pushed more. So they create then more depth, so he can then make changes. So at the moment, they're 11 strong, but he needs a little bit more quality.
One team we haven't touched on yet, Spurs. Frank, you asked, how long will Mourinho stay at Spurs? This is year two. It's supposed to be the year that everything goes well for Jose. You have some hint that he won't make it through the season?
Well, having seen the first season, I have the right to have a question mark, you know, about the fact that he might not stay long, you know. The recruitment is not there. I know he's asking for a new striker, and the club wants another striker. They're going to get it or not? I don't know. Nobody's going to come to Tottenham. And Tottenham lost so much in 2 years from since the final of the Champions League. I mean, they are not competing for the top four, that's for sure. So the fans won't be happy at the fact that no players want to come to Tottenham, that it's time to change for a new era. What's going to happen in the stand? And it's going to be projected to the bench. And I'm not sure with the way Mourinho wants to play that he's going to suit the fans, he's going to suit the board. So if you don't have the results, which I wish to Mr. Mourinho, is not going to stay long.
One thing we know, he won't be complaining. No, that's not true. He was complaining today about the fixture congestion already. Robert, what's your bigger concern with Spurs, the squad or the manager?
To a certain degree, the manager. When you look at some of the players they've got in their squad, this is the same sort of squad that they did so well and got in the top four, got to the Champions League final. They've got lots of options throughout midfield, out in the front areas, the centre-back areas as well. My worry is when I saw Spurs last season, every time I went to see them, they came up with a different formation, different tactics. It doesn't look as though Mourinho knew exactly what he wanted, which was totally against what he did at Chelsea, where he knew exactly what he wanted from the team. He had a structured game plan. He might have changed it during the game at times just to get the best out of the team, to thwart the opposition. But every time I saw them play at Spurs last season, they had a different formation, a different set of tactics, and it didn't work for them. And the players didn't look as though they knew really what they were doing. And I couldn't understand why he had Harry Winks playing as the holding midfield player who was passing square and backwards with no penetration whatsoever. That's an area he's got to sort out.
Don, in your opinion, what's more likely next season? Spurs finish top four or Jose Mourinho doesn't finish the season as their manager?
I don't think Spurs finish top four, Seb. I can't see it. Their squad is simply not good enough. It's not strong enough. I think when you look at the attacking players, you know, they've got some very, very good players, an exceptional striker in Harry Kane. Midfield is getting a little bit stronger. I think Højbjerg is a really good signing. He'll stiffen them up and add a little bit of bite. But can he get Davinson Sanchez playing better? Can he get Alderweireld, if they play as a pair, being quite solid? Fullbacks, I think, for Spurs, they're not the same as what they were probably 3 or 4 years ago. When I looked at Spurs and the options that Pochettino had, he had so many, you know, top quality fullbacks where you could rely on. He could chop and change every single game. I don't see it there. So I think the back line, and especially in fullbacks, that needs strengthening big time.
Gentlemen, great stuff. The action gets underway Saturday. The Premier League is back. A four-pack of games. Manchester City, Manchester United saw their matches postponed due to their European campaigns. There you see the slate for the weekend.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We've been doing Premier League predictions all week on the show. You can catch the best of them over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel, but we have more predictions to get to. And really, nobody cares about the predictions. What they care about are the pictures associated with the predictions. Let's start off with Stuart Robson's picks here. A well-coiffed Robbo. Look at that. Mm.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, that's a 17 or 18-year-old Stuart Robson there.
Oh, young. Okay, she's got Liverpool winning, City second, Chelsea third, United fourth, Arsenal fifth, Spurs sixth, top scorer Aubameyang, Kevin De Bruyne, your player of the year. Let's take a look at Don Hutchison's predictions for the upcoming season. City to win it. Now, I know, Don, you got an asterisk depending on their signings. Liverpool, Chelsea, yeah. United, Arsenal, Wolves. You got Harry Kane as your top scorer. Timo Werner as your player of the year as well. And then finally, Frank Leboeuf. What have you come up with, and really, what pit? Wow, that's a. I'm more impressed right. with the collar than the hair there. Look at that.
Cantona there.
City to win. Yeah. Chelsea is your runner-up. Liverpool in third. Wow, okay. United fourth. Leicester City fifth. Much to the chagrin, apparently, of Don. Wolves in sixth. Gabriel Jesus as your top scorer. I guess you could have put I don't care for that one as well. But you put I don't care for your player of the year. I thought about slipping Christian Pulisic in there just since you didn't offer one. But we'll leave it as I don't care for now. Frank, first of all, you have to defend your decision here to have Liverpool behind Chelsea. I know you have your Chelsea ways, but come on, they're 33 points behind Liverpool last season. Stevie is screaming somewhere right now.
I know, and I don't put many chances on my betting, but I just want to think that football is not an exact science, and I want to make sure that we can still have surprises. And of course, everybody knows my love of Chelsea, but I'm not being completely insane when I say that. I mean, the recruitment of Chelsea is absolutely fantastic, and I mentioned, you know, the problem that Liverpool could face during that season, that the lack of competition between the players were already established for like the past 2 years, and they won the Champions League, they won the Premier League. Maybe they're going to be blasé and going to miss some games or being bad in some games. And we also said that without the fans, Liverpool is not maybe the same club or the same team. Because they always, I mean, especially at home, they used to play at 12. And we know that makes a huge difference. It's why I took a chance to put Chelsea second.
Don, one of the things that jumped out to me from your predictions, you got Harry Kane as your golden boot, but you don't even have Spurs in the top six. How's that going to work?
I don't think it will. I think Harry Kane, listen, I think if he stays fit, I think he's nailed on. There's some great contenders. I don't think Jesus... he'll be up there. Sorry, Frank, but I don't think your player for Aguero's fit, so I'm not sure where he's getting his numbers from. Aubameyang will come into that conversation. But I just see the way Nuno's spent his money. He hasn't lost too many players at Wolves. I see them kicking on. They won't have a million games like they had last season. So I think they'll finish well. And I just see the way Mikel Arteta's gotten the Arsenal side playing. I think they have got some fantastic young players. Again, Me and Robbo at the Community Shield and people like Nketiah and Saka and Maitland-Niles, their hunger to play the game, and Lacazette and Aubameyang and the players that they've got, and the defensive shape all of a sudden, which has come from absolutely nowhere. They look as though they're hard to beat and they've got a game plan. So I expect big things from Arsenal this season.
You've got Timo Werner as your player of the year. What about the betting in period, the transition period we always hear about with the Premier League?
Yeah, I buy that. And listen, I was so close to putting Kevin De Bruyne, and that's the obvious one because he's just a ridiculously good player and probably one of the best players or the best player in the Premier League. But I've just seen enough of Timo Werner. And the question mark is where is he going to play, Seb? Is he going to play as Chelsea's number nine, which is a different skill to what he's normally sort of used to, as Robbo said before? I think he's better playing off the left-hand side where he can make those darting runs. But in terms of his quality and his pace and how dynamic he is, I think Chelsea fans are absolutely going to love him.
Robbo, I can't help but note that you've left Arsenal out of your top four, given all the momentum that they seem to have built. Why?
Because I still don't think they're a top four side. I think they'll be challenging, but they won't quite get there. They've still got problems. if you look at their midfield, Xhaka has to be at his very best to be good enough to play in a top side midfield. Ceballos is good on the ball, but I'm not sure he's got defensive qualities. You'd still say that even though they played well towards the end of last season, David Luiz can be a liability at the back. I think he might be out for a little while before at the start of the season. But I still think Mikel Arteta's got a lot of work to do. I think they're going to play quite as well as they did right at the end of last season, and they're going to lose some games. I think they'd be better than they were last year, but they're not going to get in that top four. They're challenging, but not going to get there.
Thanks, guys. We'll hear more from the boys in today's edition of Extra Time. We take your questions off Twitter. Don't miss it.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Let's take a quick look back at the Premier League table from last season, or at least the bottom half of it. That's where we find Everton, who finished last year in 12th. The club didn't sit on their hands, though. Some big signings in the offseason, of course, as we took a look. This isn't Carlo Ancelotti's perspective 11. This is Don Hutchison's 11, but we know it's pretty close. They've brought in, of course, Alan from Napoli, Doucouré from Watford, and James from Real Madrid. We welcome back Robbo, Frank, and Don Hutchison. Don, as the Evertonian in the panel, just how much are they going to be improved this season?
Oh, immensely. And I think for the first time, Seb, you can see a plan from the manager. I think, you know, Everton over the last two or three years have spent an awful lot of money, but there's been no real plan. It's just like they sort of picked and choose some good players with potential. But under Carlo now, I mean, they are attracting some big players. Listen, Everton over the last 5 or 6 years, or even a little bit longer, without Carlo Ancelotti, would never, ever be attracting the players like James Rodriguez. So they're looking at a different market all of a sudden, which is exciting. The Everton fans, I've spoke to a lot of them, and they are super excited. So they're building, and Carlo's building, an exceptional team. You saw my sort of strongest team on paper. The trouble with that is, and the contradiction to that is, Carlo likes to play 4-4-2, so I had them down as a diamond with Alan sitting, who I think the Evertonians are going to absolutely love watching, because he'll start smashing a few, which they've been missing of late. Doucouré will be powerful from midfield and get goals. James playing as the 10, and you've got Gylfi Sigurdsson, who was £50 million, and Andre Gomes sort of battling for a position as well. So all of a sudden, I think it's pretty exciting times going into a potentially new stadium as well, I must add, for Everton fans.
I feel like everybody wants to know what James is going to do in the Premier League. Frank, it's been so long since we saw this player really truly dominate a game, maybe like 5 or 6 years. What can we reasonably expect from James?
I don't know, Sebi. That's the main concern that I have, you know. And when I see those players, you know, I always think, you know, and wish them, you know, to come back and to come back to their prime and show to the world that they're not finished. That's the concern that I have for James Rodriguez, because, I mean, he's been through many, many disappointments for himself, but also for the fans that he has, you know, around the world. And since the World Cup in 2014, I mean, we only see the shadow of James Rodriguez. And I don't know if it's a good decision for Everton and Carlo Ancelotti to sign him. It's worth the, let's say, it was the shot, and Everton fans will be hoping for the best, like I do. But I still have some doubts and question marks about him, and we're going to see very quickly if it was a good thing or a very bad thing.
Robbo, what do you think Everton will get out of James this season?
Well, I think the other two players that Ancelotti has bought have been bought to get the best out of James Rodriguez, because they're very good defensive players. Don mentioned Alan. I thought he's been brilliant for Napoli, apart from last season. Before that, he was their outstanding midfield player in terms of winning the ball back, getting around the field, making tackles, passing it quite simply, but also passing it into the front areas. Doucouré, likewise for Watford, he's a good athlete. He'll get back up and down the field. He'll win the ball back. He's a decent passer of the ball as well. And that will allow James Rodriguez to be the creator in that midfield area. I think Don had Sigurdsson in the side as well, but I don't think they can play together. So I think it's either James Rodriguez or Sigurdsson that's going to be the playmaker. Hopefully we see James back to his very best. But those two other midfield players are going to be key to it.
Don, I'd be remiss if I let this segment expire without mentioning the fact that you picked West Ham to finish in the top four last year. Do you want to reserve a similar fate for Everton right now?
I'm not going all in, Sebi, like I did last season. I've made that mistake once last season, and I'm not going again. But I will predict, hopefully, that they finish in the top seven and a Europa League spot.
Everton Spurs then on Sunday. You don't even have to wait that long for more ESPN FC. We're back on your screens tomorrow, all over day one of the upcoming Premier League season.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, that's all the time we've got for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to our good friend Hercules Gomez for joining us to talk some U.S. men's national team, Major League Soccer as well. But now it's the moment you've all been waiting for, Extra Time with Don, Robbo, and Frank. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into today's edition of ESPN FC Extra Time. We have your questions straight off of Twitter. We also have an amazing trio of guests, Stuart Robson, Frank LaBeouf, Don Hutchison, all with us. Let's get to the first one, guys. John asks, have you ever been on a team with so many new players coming in like Chelsea this season? Was it difficult? And did you develop chemistry? Frank, this seems like a perfect question for you.
On a team with any players?
Were you not listening to me when I was reading the question?
I was listening. I was watching Dan and Stuart, so I didn't listen to the question.
What were they doing?
What I was doing? Well, I don't know. Nothing. I was shoot to play. You know, they brought so many players, but I was shoot to play, so no problem for me.
You had better concentration when you were a player, Frank.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I didn't care about the others, and I was... Now, the thing is, I think it's part of the modern football where you have to accept the competition, and you know that you have so many games to play that you have to be focused on being healthy, training well, and at some point you will have a chance. And when you have that chance, you have to be good if you want to have a chance to carry on. That's the only thing. We had less games. I think when I played the World Cup, of course, I had like 60 games, but normally we are like 40, 45 games, and that was it. So, of course, if you were a substitute, you had no many chances to play. But nowadays, it's different. For any club, it's mostly different because you have lots of games.
Bravo, let's see if you want to listen to my question as I read it. Was winning West Ham's Player of the Year award at all awkward between you and your teammates?
Was it awkward between me and my teammates? I don't know. They might have begrudged me winning it, but I thought that I probably deserved it that year. It says something about the West Ham team that Billy Bonds, who was nearly 42, was the runner-up to that Player of the Year when I won it in 1987, 88. I'm not sure. One or two other players might not have liked the fact that I got it. I can think of one or two that I didn't get on with, but in the main, I think most would have agreed.
You beat out a 42-year-old. Still something to write home about. Jeremy asked, what was the biggest scoreline you were a part of? I wonder if he was watching MLS last night. We had Seattle beat San Jose 7-1. Don, what was the most lopsided scoreline you ever partook in?
I've had a couple, Sebi. I've been done 7-1 for West Ham against Blackburn away from home, and that was embarrassing. And I've also been done a 7 against Man United for West Ham at Old Trafford. So They are never nice. I think the most I've been, when I've been winning, I think is 5 or 6, but the 7s and 8s when you get beat, I mean, they are just humiliating.
Frank, you ever ship more than 7 goals?
Yes, we had a 10-0 for France with against Azerbaijan, and I scored 2 goals, my 2 first goals with the national team. A win was a major, like a volley behind my knee, fantastic. I don't know how I was able to do that. And I won a fake cross when I shot, in fact, and the goalkeeper was surprised. But we won 10-0, but I lost a game also 8-0. Even if I didn't finish the game because I got a red card because I got so upset with my teammates and I tackled one of the opponent and I got red carded after 5-0.
Robbo,
very good souvenir.
Robbo, worst beating that you were a part of?
I think I lost 6-0 with West Ham on an occasion at Oldham Athletic. So common denominator seems to be West Ham. But the most embarrassing one was in 1982, I think, when we went to White Hart Lane. I was playing for Arsenal. We just reached the semi-final of the FA Cup. It was on the bank holiday Monday before the FA Cup semi-final, and we got beaten 5-0. And there wasn't much effort put in by many of the players that day trying to protect themselves for the FA Cup semi-final. So that was the most humiliating.
Sticking with you, Robbo, thoughts on Arteta announcing that Guendouzi will remain at Arsenal. Should he be sent out the door after his childish actions against Brighton, or does he deserve a second chance?
Well, it looks as though Mikel Arteta is forgiving some of the players now. Guendouzi's one. Mikel Arteta looks like he's off the naughty step for a little while. I think he handled Guendouzi really well because Guendouzi had lost control. He was out of control for much of last season, both on the field and off of it. He's lack of discipline tactically. He's lack of discipline when he's making tackles. He's lack of discipline with the referee and the opponents. And Mikel Arteta had to show who was boss. He showed him who was boss, left him out the side. Arsenal started to play well. I'm surprised he's bringing him back in, maybe because nobody actually wants him at the moment.
Don, Everton question here. I'll fire it your way. Did you ever have a coach who was as obsessed with you as Ancelotti is with James Rodriguez?
Not obsessed, but I was lucky enough to play for a manager twice. The great Howard Kendall, who brought me to Sheffield United from West Ham. And then when we lost the playoff final against Crystal Palace in the Championship, he then went to Everton, Howard, and he took me with him. So I had a great relationship with Howard Kendall. He's one of my favourite managers that I've ever played for in my life. We were so, so close. And it was nice when a manager who signed you before brings you back and takes you to a club like Everton because, you know, it's a huge football club, but, you know, Howard is rated amongst the very, very best that's ever managed Everton. So it was a real honour.
On the show, we've heard you guys cry about preseason quite a bit. Our next question, what's the worst preseason friendly that you guys have ever played in? Frank?
Maybe my second season as a football player, I was playing for Laval in close to Brittany, and I got injured twice during the preseason, which is real nightmare, we know, when you're a football player because you have to restart from scratch all the preseason preparation. And it took me like 3 months to be finally prepared. That was the worst ever, but I was 21, so I guess it would have been like 10 years later, it would have been almost impossible to be ready the whole season long.
Hey, Robbo, realistically speaking, what should be Arsenal's aim at the end of the season?
Well, realistically, they've got to be in that fourth position. That's what I think their aim will be, and to do well in maybe a couple of the cups. I don't think they're going to get into the top four. I think there's 4 better teams than them at the moment. I think they might come fifth. It's going to be a struggle for them to get in that top four, but that's got to be their aim, and have a good couple of FA Cup run and maybe Europa League run. That'd be good for Mikel Arteta.
Frank, we talked about this a little bit on the show. Our next question asks, which manager do you think will be sacked first in the coming Premier League season? Based on the questions you had, is Jose Mourinho on that list?
It could be, but we didn't talk about the others. I mean, it could be also Solskjaer if he doesn't do well. And what about Guardiola? I mean, if he doesn't start well the season, you know.
They're not going to fire Pep. They're not going to fire Pep. Come on.
Well, you never know. You know, chairmen and boards are completely crazy. You know, if they don't get what they have, if they have like 5 points, they are 5 points behind Liverpool, you know, after 10 games, maybe they can get crazy. I don't know. I don't wish to any coach to be sacked, but it can happen. But it can happen to anybody. What about Sheffield United? If they are last at the table after the season that they had last year, what's going to happen to the coach? You know, the board will be unhappy because why he was so good last season and bad this season? Bye bye. Nobody is sure to stay. Well, Mourinho, even more than the others.
Don, you ready to add your name to Frank's Guardiola out campaign?
Guardiola's not going to be sacked by Man City. Not a chance. I think the teams that are going to struggle, maybe someone like Dean Smith at Aston Villa, he needs to start the season well, because what you wouldn't want from an Aston Villa's point of view is for the manager and the team not to start well and they be in the bottom three or fourth bottom and he's under pressure after four or five games. So he must start well. I mean, you know, if Watford were still in the Premier League, they'd be certainties to fire their manager because they only seem to last 5 minutes. So I think the teams that come up, you know, I think Slaven will be given a lot of time at West Brom for the job that he's done. Scotty Parker the same. But I think someone like Dean Smith, I hope that he starts well.
Robbo, who's your first to go?
I put Brighton down in the bottom three. So Potter, Graham Potter, who's meant to be a very good young coach, I think he could be under a bit of pressure if they don't start the season well and they're in that bottom three.
All right, our final question today comes from one of my favorite Twitter accounts, Ale Moreno's Diving School. Frank, was Craig known for his shooting? I've been watching his highlights and he scored some beautiful goals. Who watches Craig's highlights?
I don't remember Craig scoring a goal. That's my main concern.
Frank,
and
I think your silence, just your face.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I saw some highlights, you know, a fantastic goal that he scored, like I think it was against Liverpool, I don't know, or he chipped the ball, whatever it was, but even if they lost the game, but that's it. But I don't remember Craig scoring a goal when he was playing with me. I'm sorry, so sorry for the answer, but nothing much I can say.
Don, don't know if you've heard this before on the show, but Craig actually did score a goal, and in a World Cup, how about that?
Craig was a decent player, honestly. Craig was decent. His attitude was good. He could play a number of positions. He always wanted
his
to
attitude
be the player.
Was good. We're talking about the same Craig Burley?
Yeah, because he was nasty. He was horrible. But when you're in his team, that's a good thing. Craig always wanted to play inside. He had himself down as a sexy sort of midfield player.
There's nothing sexy about Craig Burley.
No,
stop.
No.
That is just terrible analysis. Great. I can't let you do that. No.
Listen. Craig had himself as a sexy midfield player. All the managers who knew what Craig was about stuck him on the right wing and just said, run up and down as fast as you can and cross the ball.
I never said, Sabi, I never said that Craig wasn't decent. You know, I only say that Craig wasn't the top scorer. I remember playing on the right side and delivering. No. But I remember Craig delivering crosses, very good crosses from the right side, and he was very powerful, and he was a real dog on the field, really to bite anybody. He was a real warrior with a little bit of technique as well.
Sebi, when Scotland played England, and Craig Brown, our manager, done his team talk, and he went through all the Scottish players, he went through all the English players. And he said, I wouldn't swap you for him. And he got to Craig and he went, you are the best crosser in the whole. He went, I would not swap you for David Beckham.
No.
You see.
Yeah, but then we thought, manager's talking rubbish now.
Nah.
He had us 9 to 10. And then as soon as he said Craig and Beckham, we were like, gone, finished.
There you go. Plenty more about Craig, his good looks, his good crosses, his good shots on tomorrow's show. I'm sure we'll talk some Premier League as well. Don't miss it. Thanks, boys.